Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, the world that today's boy is growing up in is certainly different from the one that his parents grew up in. Immersed in consumer culture and the cyber world, today's boys are being exposed to more intense marketing, violence, and sexual imagery than ever before, and they are suffering for it. Mental health issues, body image problems of all things, cyberbullying, gang violence, addictions, they're just some of the issues that they're facing. And parents are often feeling bewildered and powerless to make a difference. Maggie Hamilton has been on this program before. Last time it was when she was talking about her book, What's Happening to Our Girls. Now she's come up with a follow-up title, What's Happening to Our Boys. She's been spending the last few years researching these fairly frightening trends to, arm us with some skills and knowledge in terms of how we can protect our boys from what is an ever-increasing toxic culture. Maggie, welcome again to Open House. Good to talk to you.
Lovely to be with you again, Sheridan.
Yeah, look, this has been now a bit of a campaign for you, really, because it started off with the girls and now it's the boys. This is becoming something of a focus for you personally.
It is, actually. And look, when I began all this, Sheridan, I must say most of the things that I have in, well, both the girls' book and now the boys' book, I didn't know about before I did the research. And I expected to just write the books and inform people, but then you realise, as you kind of follow everything that's happening, that things are escalating to such an extent that you just can't leave it at that. Mm. And I think that's probably what a lot of us feel, because this is our tomorrow, it's the future of our families, our communities and our nation and our world, really. So I think it's really important that we understand the issues and are very clear about how we can help our young people.
Yes. Well, you've broken up in the book into a number of sections, and I think that'll probably be a good guide for our conversation tonight. Media and marketing, computers, pornography, and some other areas. Let's start off on media and marketing.
Yeah.
You start the book, actually, in the introduction by saying this, I quote, "Pop culture has become the new parent." Just explain that.
Absolutely. I think because of the new technologies, which of course have only been around such a short while, and it's easy to forget that overlaying what parents teach their children is this massive kind of influence that kids tap into daily that affects their belief systems, it affects their aspirations, it affects how they see themselves and each other. So it really is almost like the super parent in a way. And I think it's very easy sometimes for parents just to assume that it's just the entertainment for the kids and not realise just what a huge influence that it is on our young people.
Yes, well, let's follow it up with another quote then. This one is from a kindergarten teacher. Quote, "Children used to be good at making up their own games. Now I have to work a lot harder at providing alternative role models to superheroes like Ben 10. How much are boys being influenced by what they actually do see on screen and these kinds of these cartoon characters, Ben 10 or whatever it might be?
They're being influenced hugely. And even as tiny children, as with the Bob the Builder and Thomas the Tank, what the preschool teachers were telling me was that they're seeing a radical drop in imagination and the children aren't playing freely, being a whole lot of different characters, which is very good for them because there's a lot of learning in that. They're just playing the scripts of the DVDs they've been watching over and over. And also what we're seeing out of that is an anxiety around branded products for children at preschool. And boys are getting very much roped into this now, worried about whether they have the right backpack, the right branded lunchbox, and so on. And so what we're seeing with our young preschool boys is, in lots of ways now, they're following the trajectory that precious girls have been under for some time, where they are evaluating themselves in these terms. You know, it's what I have, it's my possessions, it's what I look like, it's not who I am as a person. And these are messages that our little preschoolers are getting.
So this brand name marketing and the pressures around that, you know, it used to be the teenagers, did feel the pressure to have the particular brand of shoes or clothes or whatever it might be. It's getting younger and younger and younger now.
Absolutely. And in fact, that product placement begins at 6 months. And I look at that a bit in the girls' book, basically the branded fun figures, where they appear on a baby's T-shirt, their bib, or on the crotch of their nappies. That's where the product placement begins. What I've seen since the girls' book came out is now that they're looking to take marketing to another level. And one of the areas that they're looking at now is looking at neuroscience and how they can, things like, you know, how often a child blinks for the product. And if they don't blink a lot, they're kind of mesmerized with it. So they know that they've hit the nail on the head.
Is that right?
So it's becoming much, much more sophisticated, more use of the senses. For instance, they've found now that mother's breast milk has the scent of vanilla in it. So marketers are thinking about whether or not to put vanilla in soft toys. So it's going to become much more subliminal in the future.
Isn't
so we
it?
Really have to be on the ball with all these,
yes.
these products.
Yes, very much so. Because the whole thing with all of this is that it's like the brand name buys you entrance into the cool group. I mean, if you don't have the brand name, then you're not in the crowd.
No.
And of course, everybody, human beings, long to have connections with other people, but let alone children. I mean, you know, if you're the odd one out in the schoolyard, I mean, you know, you really feel it. So this is the intense problem. It actually, the brand name equals social entrance.
It does, and I think it strikes at the heart of our humanity, I think, and the humanity of a small child, because no matter how small or big we are, we all want to be loved, be acknowledged, and to belong. And the kind of insidious aspect of all this marketing is that because they use the best child psychologists and many, many other professionals, including cultural anthropologists, they know the anxiety buttons to press to get, you know, children from being very small up to do what they want in terms of buying and so forth by playing on those very real human desires to as I say, to be loved and belong and to be acknowledged.
That's right. This is Open House across the nation. Maggie Hamilton is with us, author of What's Happening to Our Boys. Happy for you to throw something into the conversation. 1-300-40-2020. Have you seen this happen in your family? Have you seen the pressures on your boys along the lines of what we're talking about? Will I be getting to some how-tos in terms of combating this a little bit later on into the conversation, but happy to take your call too, 1-300-40-2020. Before we leave this this topic of marketing as well, Maggie, you're talking about body image problems now for boys?
Yeah. What I discovered when I went back to do the research on what's happening in the whole corporate marketing globally is that the corporates have basically realised that boys are the last demographic to be targeted, that, you know, we know that little girls have been targeted for quite some time. And so everybody now from, you know, fashion houses to toiletry manufacturers to the big entertainment corporations like Disney, et cetera, are spending millions on targeting boys.
Hmm.
And we're already, this is a fairly recent, but in the last couple of years, but we're already seeing boys quite young, very anxious around looks and appearance. And I found boys 8 up already were really quite concerned about, you know, having the right shoes, the right hairstyle. And then by the time they get into the teens, you know, really concerned about body image. You know, I had boys, young boys saying to me that they don't like to go to the beach in summer because, you know, they don't want to have to take their top off because they don't have the six pack and so on. So we're seeing a spike now absolutely in the body issues for our boys.
Yes, it's getting younger and younger. Okay, next section, computers and the internet. The whole obsession with computers that boys and girls, but, you know, boys naturally have, you know, being the tinkering types and interested in the way that things work and things. Obviously, that's causing some sort of problems, but it's actually causing some health issues.
It is, and I think there are a number of things. I think, first of all, we know that boys' brains are wired differently from girls, and so reading and communication doesn't come as easily to boys unless they're growing up in a household where they're encouraged to talk and discuss from being very little. And so computers are doubly attractive because with the social networking, for instance, it means that it kind of you can avoid that messy face-to-face interaction. But, of course, it's particularly important for boys to be able to do that because, you know, as you grow, you need social confidence. It's really important for, you know, as you grow up for relationships, work and so on. And so that's one of the areas where boys, that's why also they're very attracted to the video games. And what I saw with the research was I couldn't believe the amount of overstimulation that kids were having in their bedrooms, you know, that the boys would have several screens open off and on the computer. Mm. They'd have the iPod going. They might have telly going on in the background as well. And so, therefore, by the time they come to go to sleep at night, a number of boys were saying to me that it took 1 or 2 hours to get off to sleep. Mm. And sometimes, you know, this is like 3 or 4 in the morning during a school day, not just at the weekend. So we're seeing a problem with sleeplessness. Of course, we're seeing a problem with lack of exercise. It's also that 24/7 thing of, you know, if you're not having a good time with your peers, that they can get to you 24/7. And so, therefore, the stress of having to stay in contact.
Mobile phones always on overnight.
Always on overnight. Then, you know, that thing of not being daring to be out of the loop, even if there's bullying and stuff going on. So it creates a very pressured environment where there's no chill-out time.
Mm. I think of a conversation we had with Dr. Arch Hart, the psychologist in the US who wrote a book called Thrilling Ourselves to Death, and he's talked about how we're overstimulating the pleasure centre of our brain to the point where we don't actually experience pleasure anymore. So we need more and more and more, you know, and it's all the computer games. Anything with a computer chip is actually giving you the wrong kind of pleasure.
Yeah.
So it seems like, you know, the more and more that we, I guess, are exposing our kids to that, the more and more they're going to have a problem from an earlier age.
And I think that's right. And you see that in the boredom, that kind of whatever kind of culture that we see now in the teens and increasingly in the tween years where nothing excites. I think it's like, one of the big concerns I have, and particularly for boys, because I think, you know, they struggle with interaction often and they're encouraged, is that the nuances of relationships just get totally collapsed, and the life experience, the, you know, being part of a physical community of people of different ages and so on, all that is getting very collapsed into this very narrow, very pressured, very full-on kind of world.
Yes. And, of course, the internet is now allowing boys to lead really secret lives. I mean, there are whole facilities online, Second Life and all of those kinds of things, to lead a completely different existence online.
This is it. And I think, again, the research is quite interesting as to the number of boys who have a number of secret personas online where not even their best friends know about. So, again, it's that thing that you can be whoever you want to be. And I think this is something also that, you know, parents naturally worry about online predators, and we always assume it's a pedophile. And, of course, you know, that is a real risk in certain situations. But what we're seeing increasingly, actually, is that the predators are actually increasingly kids of their own age and often peers who actually know exactly who you are, even though you think you're contacting a complete stranger. So it's becoming a very, very complex world, I think, for our young kids. And that's why I think it's so important, and particularly for boys, because we always assume that our boys can, you know, they can cope and they can muddle through, that we actually give them good guidance about the things they're seeing so that they actually have a framework with which to kind of evaluate the situations they often get themselves in.
Yeah, and in connection with this conversation as well, Maggie, is very sad news, sad to me anyway, I thought it was very, very sad news, about the government dropping the whole internet filter.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought that was going to be part of the answer. Now, of course, parents have to, you know, put in some things in terms of looking after their kids and making sure the kids don't have computers in their bedrooms and, you know, not accessing stuff that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
But parents need help with this, and I thought that was going to be one help that was going to be wonderful.
Oh, I just think it's very sad because, I mean, the kinds of things that kids are accessing now, I think the only word I can think of, having, you know, obviously researched this, and I must say I found it very hard to do so because it's so dark, it's unspeakable, some of the things that our kids can access.
Mm.
And I just feel very sad that commercialism takes precedence over protecting the next generation.
Yes.
And I think we really have to take a good hard look at ourselves as a society. I mean, even not just, of course, online. I mean, I was at the Sydney Airport the other morning, dropping my husband off, and driving back, the first traffic light is that awful billboard encouraging people to come to Sydney and have an affair while they're here.
Yes,
and it's obviously
yes.
some sort of escort agency. A massive billboard.
Yeah.
And you know, our boys are being continually subjected to messages that really encourage them to be predatory.
Yes. All right, well, we need to continue that form of the conversation on as well in terms of pornography. Just hang on the line for a second, Maggie, and I'm happy to take folks' calls on this too. 1-300-40-2020. What have you seen that your boy is actually struggling with? I mean, a completely different set of pressures than what we used to have when we were growing up. 1-300-40-2020. If you've got a question for Maggie, you can call that through too. Maggie, let me give you a comment from somebody on Facebook this week who actually commented on this topic as we were starting to get people thinking about it. It was from Fiona. She said, "Unless you stay at home and never watch TV or read a magazine, it's almost impossible not to allow your children to see sexualized images. Music videos are like porn. So many kids' shows and cartoons are about which boy do you like. Billboards are M-rated, etc. I did as much as I could to shelter my sons from what I deemed harmful images, only to have them come home from kindergarten talking about sex."
Yeah.
"I guess we can only teach them what's right and most of all try and set a good example." That was from Fiona. Kindergarten.
No, she's absolutely right. I've had a number of parents, like a lot of parents, quite distressed about what some of the children have come home and the kind of, A, the language they've been using, B, the topics. And, you know, I think what's sad, and again, I'm so pleased to be talking about this with in relation to our beautiful, gorgeous boys, because I think we are aware of the sexualization of society. How could you not be? And we immediately focus on girls, which is very important. But it does leave our boys out in the cold. And if we want our beautiful boys to grow up to be good, decent men, then we need to provide, I think, some really clear guidelines, wonderful role models. I think we need to invite the men back into this equation. I think men have, to some extent, been marginalised. And we really need to mobilise, I think, all the good men we know to be there and walk closely with our boys so that our boys can really get what it's like to be a real man, a good man.
What are you seeing is the result of children seeing pornographic images?
Well, this is where it gets really disturbing. I have to say, Sheridan, we now have children in primary schools in Australia grooming other kids for sex from their online experiences. And, I mean, this is very sobering and hard to talk about, but we need to.
Yes.
And, you know, some psychologists are working in this area, and I check in with those who work in the sexual assault arena quite regularly. They're concerned that we could be growing a new generation of sexual abusers from their internet experiences. So we have some really big battles ahead of us, I think, for the hearts and minds of our children.
In the book, you talk about a group of six-year-old boys in Queensland that were forcing classmates to perform sex acts on them. I mean, six-year-olds shouldn't even know anything about these things.
No. And I think what's interesting when I talk to the sexual assault support professionals, to clinical psychologists, who obviously see some fairly disgusting things, you know, regularly because that's their job, and thank goodness people will do these wonderful jobs, it's interesting how they actually can still have an empathy for boys. You know, they absolutely abhor the things that they see boys doing. And, of course, you know, boys are also vulnerable to sexual assault, and that's something we don't talk about, and we have to be aware of that. But they see the fact that society is being abusive to boys to not protect them, to prevent this kind of predatory behaviour happening. And the problem is, I think, as you've got young boys coming into puberty, it's very confusing anyway to, you know, to understand that you are a sexual being and what does that mean and what's appropriate and how does one express that. And, you know, they're going around seeing billboards, as you say, the kind of pornographic MTV clips. We've also got to face the fact that we have a new generation of And some girls who are very sexually out there, I'm not saying for a minute that they're asking to be assaulted in any way, but who often behave inappropriately. Well,
they're following their role models, aren't they?
They're following their role models. And we've now got young girls as young as 8, would you believe, sexting images and messages to boys. So we need, as adults, to be very aware of where the thin ice is with all this. Then we can protect them. Then we can help them understand, you know, if a young boy comes across pornographic stuff on the internet, what that actually means in terms of, you know, what sad and unhappy lives so many of the people who get involved in pornography.
Yes.
And so on. So that, how would you feel if that was your sister or your mother? We have to personalise it so that they understand to keep that beautiful tenderness and feeling aspect of boys alive.
Yes. Well, let's move to that area then, and just what we can do as parents, as uncles and aunts and friends and educators and parents and teachers and the whole lot, just what we can do. Now, you're talking before about kind of almost this shrinking childhood, the fact that they're so exposed to media and to marketing, to consumerism, being forced to grow up way too early. Yes. What can parents do then to reclaim the childhood years?
And this is really important, Sheridan, because what I really want to emphasise is there are so many things we can do. Mm-hmm. And in fact, often it's a lot easier than just going with, you know, what seems like the easiest thing to do, going with what everybody else is doing. The first thing is, I think we've got to give our children childhoods. And so, you know, of course, you know, some branded things are fun, but to get children back to imaginative play, play outside, playing with objects they find in the home and making those into, you know, imaginative leaps of adventure or whatever, that's really, really important. I think it's also incredibly important that parents look at, it does take a village to bring up a child, and to look at who are the people in your village. Today, so many of our kids are just mixing with their peers. They need friendship across the generations, so they understand there's different approaches to things, wisdoms they can access. They're not always going to come to mum and dad when they have issues, but if there are other good adults around with good values, etc., then you've actually got that lovely safety net. Simple things like, you know, getting that kitchen table culture going where you sit down and have a meal together, TV off, where things can be discussed. And sadly, I think we have to discuss a number of issues you probably feel a bit twitchy about earlier on. You know, the fact that we do have girls sexting from 8 means that we need to talk to our boys that, you know, about a whole range of things, like the fact that they might receive a phone call from somebody and explain to them why those things aren't good ideas and create a culture in the home where things get discussed, where, because so often what the kids say to me is, they don't talk to mum and dad because they think mum and dad will freak out. So we have to be approachable about things. It doesn't mean to say that, you know, we have to tell a child everything about pornography at 5. Obviously not. But we can talk about rude and horrible images.
Yes.
Whatever is appropriate for the age, and so that they know that you are there for them and that you will be the person who will help them through with that, and so that they don't, they're not worried about telling you. I think that's a very important
thing. A culture of communication. That sounds wonderful. You were saying before also about almost the marginalisation of men in this. Can you just explain more and how men can get more involved here?
Yes, I think it's really important, the culture of being around good men. What I looked at in the book, there's a wonderful organisation in New Zealand called Big Buddy, and that's for boys who don't have dads around. But they are doing quite wonderful things. Just going out with boys, fishing, camping, you know, it's not a structured thing particularly. And what, when I spoke to the boys themselves, they talked about, you know, how they really appreciated it when they had a dad around and could have one-on-one time and time with the men who would talk to them about stuff, who would talk about sex and women and work and play and all those elements in a conversational kind of relaxed way. They felt very protected by that and comforted by it.
Yes.
And I think we have to realise that, you know, to walk that journey to manhood, they do need to have good men standing close
yes.
to them.
Yes, like you said, so many of them don't actually have dad around.
No.
But even if they do have... Yeah, and even if they do have dad around, you've mentioned that before, sometimes they might actually, you know, be open a little bit more with somebody else. So if there's
That's
a good
right.
quality uncle around or
yes.
or a really reliable, trustworthy neighbour or something like that,
yes.
it's a great idea. We've got a few more things that we need to discuss. You hang on line again, Maggie, because I think we need to walk through some other practical things that parents can do. Maggie Hamilton is our guest, author of What's Happening to Our Boys. Maggie, just before we let you go, we've been talking about some ways in which parents can counteract some of these negative forces in their
yep.
lives. Let's be positive now. Just what can parents do to build resilient boys? You know, almost kind of starting from the ground up so that they might already be in a position to, have the nous to start combating these things themselves?
Well, I think, as we spoke about, I think it's so important to have a lively family culture, and that is where it's a rich world of... What's interesting about boys is how so often they love the fact that it's a home where there are social events happening. Now, I'm not talking about cocktail parties and things like that, but believe it or not, the boys love things like the barbecues and those kind of get-togethers.
Mm.
It creates that sense of village and community that we're talking about, and where stuff can often be discussed in a casual way that might not otherwise come up. I think it's really important to have an element of service. One of the things I think we've done with this generation is they don't have a sense of usefulness
mm-hmm.
in terms of being able to contribute something. And what I really noticed was with the boys that I interviewed who did some form of community service was just how much clearer they were about themselves and what they had to offer the world and felt really good about being able to do something kind and generous for others. Whether it was just at a local old people's home or some of the kids were going off to the third world. I think it's also really important to put them in, because our boys are wonderfully, wonderfully physical, to find ways where they can have what we call manage risk. So, you know, it might be that, going off to do a bit of abseiling with that, you know, abseiling course with dad or whatever, where they can push their boundaries but in a safe way. And so that they get the chance to let off steam. Of course,
mm-hmm.
sport is a terrific thing, but not all boys are mad on sport.
Yes.
And I think it's also creating a culture where we teach them to be expressive from being very little. You know, often we're afraid of that because we kind of think it's going to make boys wussy. But this world is a very emotionally complex world, and it requires people to be very emotionally intelligent. So we need to grow up our boys to have that emotional intelligence, to be able to read situations and people so that will navigate them well in relationships, whether it's romantic relationships, family relationships, or work relationships.
Yes. Mm.
And these things can all be fun. I mean, I think that's the other thing. Some of this material is quite dark, but on the flip side of it is, if we can provide wonderful alternatives, then it can have all the richness that we'd hope for kids, and also still have them grow up in the 21st century.
Yes.
Because that's important as
yes.
well.
Yes, very much so. All right, Maggie. Well, a difficult discussion, but an important one. Thanks again for joining us tonight.
A great pleasure.
Yeah, Maggie Hamilton, who is the author of What's Happening to Our Girls and What's Happening to Our Boys.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.